Happy Tuesday.
Happy Tuesday. How's it going? I am Matt with Schematical, and as always, it's Dominic DeMarco with me. And today we are going to be talking about technical ROI, investing in your tech stack, how to calculate that, how to quantify that.
We spent the last several going pretty deep on tech, and you wanted to take this one and give a Jerry Maguire sort of moment, I'm guessing, with this one, that there's a lot of fuzzy or shiny new objects. I steal one of your lines. I see a big smile. Are you going to use that later?
No, I get the reference. Show me the money. Yep.
Exactly. Exactly. So we've been talking about a lot of shiny new tools, but show me the money is the overarching topic of this, not just around the new technology and whatnot, but around a bunch of different things. Sorry. Carry on. Show me the money, Matt.
Yeah. So I've been working on exercises to try and help my clients quantify the ROI and investments in the tech stack. And one of the things I've come to the conclusion to is you first have to measure the tech stack and what you've got there. What if you don't have proper A/B testing? If you can't tell the value per customer you're getting. It's depending on if you're a SaaS, then you've got the LTV of your customer there. If you're doing individual sales, then you know it's the average sale price, or we could even say it's the margin theoretically. I like to design systems that not only sell the most net, but also get you the best gross margins when possible, especially when I'm building a recommendation engine. If you can optimize for that, then you don't have to sell quite as much. It's great. If you don't have the tools in place to track how the user flowed through the system from point A to point Z, where they're finally checking out, then it makes it extremely difficult to quantify some of these investments. And I put together things, some metrics that I suggest we go with. So I guess I'll start with the exercise.
It's a certain obvious. Yeah. And we can start with things that are totally obvious. And then you get to some things that are more secondary, even, I'm guessing. And we've talked about this number before, the Amazon latency numbers as well, which is much harder to quantify the ROI on improving your website. But to your point, if you measure before, then you have something to measure after with that as well. So you need, if you can't measure it, you can't metric on it.
What gets measured gets managed. Yeah. And what gets measured, you can train a recommendation engine on as well, if you wanted to go the AI route. Not that we need to throw AI in everything. So I'm a follower of Jonathan Stark. He is basically the value-based pricing guy. He's a ditching hourly guy. He's convinced me to completely get rid of hours, and we don't track any of that. And so when I'm working with a client, if for every dollar they give me, I want to give them $10 of value back. And that's where this whole thing started with. So now it's so basically I go into a company and they say we want feature X, Y, and Z. And I say, okay, what's the why do we want that? What's the goal behind that? It's because it's the cool new tech. This is the conversation I hear too much. We need AI in it. Okay. How is that going to increase sales? How is that going to decrease costs? How is that going to, because at the end of the day,
improve customer experience in some way.
Exactly. Improves the customer experience so they stick around long enough to buy something. Totally understand that. So I end up asking that question, which is a question you don't get from a lot of engineers. So that's one of the unique parts about this practice. We're very much focused on the client's bottom line and getting them that ROI is why we're talking about this. But we start off with the goals. Then from there, what's the success metrics? Okay, we want people to buy more. Okay, how are we measuring that? It's not total gross. You've got, especially if you're A/B testing things, it would have to be like the amount that they've checked out with, or in SaaS, the level of package they're doing in a usage-based one, more usage.
There's a lot of different ways to slice and dice those metrics. Is it net? Is it gross? Is it the number of units moved? Is it the average sale price? Is it the average total lifetime value of a customer over the last X months? So there's a lot of different metrics in there.
Yeah, yeah. It's those. It's the costs too. So infrastructure costs. So if you've got a platform, and let's just say it's a subscription platform, and you have 1,000 people using it, if you go up to 10,000, does your infrastructure cost go up 10x? That's a problem. Or does it just double? Or does it go up? So if you 10x the amount of users, your infrastructure cost should not 10x.
That's right. Is it really linear, or is it more of a logarithmic curve that you're going to hit there?
Exactly. And so that's something I look at. Engineering and maintenance costs. This is something people don't think about. But you add in shiny new tech XYZ, now someone's got to maintain that tech. And that's an issue as well. If the more different technologies you use, the more diverse your engineering talent has to be. So you either have to have an engineer set, a couple engineers ideally, so you've got redundancy for tech A and a couple engineers for tech B, or you got to hire someone that's got cross skills, and that's a unicorn type situation that we're trying to find.
And the newer the tech, the lower the number of people that are going to be expert in it, and the less mature the tech is, and the more likely it's going to change quickly.
Yeah.
Requiring additional maintenance.
Yeah. So, yep. And if it's open source, then you've got to maintain it. You could use a managed service and maybe it'll go away. You don't know. So it all depends there. Or they, like they did with, what was it recently? Vercel, they changed their pricing model and pissed everybody off that way. Yeah, that's a ton of fun. So just keep in mind the engineering and man hours, those need to be accounted for as far as the ongoing maintenance of this. Performance and latency, as you were saying, you can have things good quality, fast,
or fast, easy, cheap.
Exactly. Yeah, fast, easy, cheap. And so you got to keep that in mind if you're, when you're doing stuff, some of these things, if you don't do them right, you're either going to end up spending a lot of money to keep latency down, or you're just going to have a slow site. But there's a way to engineer good solutions that are both fast and cost effective, but there's some variables in the background that have to be flipped to that, you know, trade-off there.
Is there other compromises in here? And something that's popping to mind is your often said 80-20 sort of rule. Do you really need to do 100% of something, or is getting to 80% going to cost half the time and give you 90% of the value? I know I just threw out a bunch of numbers, but I think the point I'm trying to make there.
Pareto's Law, I try and apply it quite a bit when looking at my client stuff. Do we need to have 100% of this stuff indexed, or can we index the 20% that make 80% of the dollars for you and then work our way out to the edges from there? And that way, but if we do that, we can keep the costs extremely reasonable. So that's something I definitely try and focus on all the time. And getting that last 1% covered can cost you 90% of your budget. Is that worth it?
And if you're doing it right, you've stepped along that a couple of ways. You said, okay, here is 80%, here is 85%, here is 90%. You're going to hopefully see, or likely see, some sort of diminishing law of returns in there, I would guess.
Yes, absolutely. Absolutely. And that's the math. I lay it out for the client and say, if we do 100%, it's going to cost you 10 times as much as if we do 98%. And let's let that 2% go sometimes. It's up to you guys. And we already talked about gross versus net income. Yeah, that's a big focus on mine as well. So yeah, you could sell more or you could make more. Actually, behind me on this whiteboard is the math from the automatic customer that talks about all that stuff. And it's almost like you drop your churn. Do we want to increase new customers, or if we just drop our churn a bit, are we going to be in a lot better spot? How much money do you want to spend on buying new customers if we can just get that churn down to less than 1% and we get better long-term revenues there?
So there's a lot of startup math behind that, or a lot of math. What's the average cost of customer acquisition? What's the average customer lifetime? How much are you spending on advertising? If you keep your customers twice as long, you can cut your advertising budget. And to your point, do you net out the same with less effort, less output, less people, less resources, less...
Yeah. Customer acquisition cost was the next thing I was going to say there. Yeah. Yeah. That's the idea, is to do more with less. And it sounds, those are buzzwords there, but that's the engineering challenge. I want to make sure the systems I design require the lowest skill level from your engineers, the fewest amount of engineers and, or at least engineering man hours to be spent on it. I want it to run on it's a challenge I actually rather enjoy, is to make something run on less compute resources. So you're spending less money on AWS bills and make it so it's laser fast. And so that's the goal.
Okay. So, and this might be a little bit of a twist, and this is something we've talked about over the last couple of weeks, not on these calls, but other times. Now, you're talking about taking all of these resources and let's say you outsource this to nearshore, offshore, whatever it happens to be. Primary objective of outsourced development is to ship features, not to minimize footprints. And this is something I've seen over and over, and I'm sure you've gone much, much deeper into it. But where is the line between we need to ship a lot of things quickly, but we need to do so efficiently? And how do you balance those two out?
That's a good point. There was an experiment, I think, that done in the 90s where they paid developers based on how many lines of code they pumped out. Or as you can imagine, they came up with
this verbose code.
Yeah.
Not even verbose. It doesn't have to be verbose. You just need new line characters.
I think they probably looked at it a little bit more closely than just new line characters, hopefully more than comments. But the idea is, like, the incentives aren't always in line there. And that's something, one of the reasons why it's like, I came up with this is to make sure that the customer's incentives and my incentives are completely in line there. I want them to sell more products. Okay. I don't want to just ship features. I don't want to just pump out code, especially AI generated crap now. I want them to be making $1 million. So then my end of it is a percentage of that. And we both make more. I want to put in the extra effort to make sure the feature goes above and beyond what, you know, the scope given to me to make sure that the business itself is doing better. And that's a huge part of the philosophy that we're trying to cultivate at Schematical here. Yeah, I know you're on board. I guess the next section is in my little outline I've got here. And for you and the audio people, I'm not showing anything, but we talk about the project value. What is the value of the client? If we can get X amount of new sales over the next Y months, 12 months or whatever, that means the company's going to sell an extra $1 million, or in case of some of my clients, $100 million or so worth of merch. So that way, you know, that's going to be the value to the customer. Or we estimate that we're going to reduce costs. Like for instance, real easy one, if you're using Redis on ElastiCache, you can switch to Valkey and save about 30%-ish on that data store particularly. So how much, depending on how big your clusters are and everything, that could be thousands of dollars a year. And if you're as big as my clients, that might be a drop in the bucket, but still, why not do it? It's as long as it doesn't require a ton of man hours to migrate, which it doesn't, then do it.
You could probably do some sort of projected future savings as well, taking into account anticipated growth versus anticipated current infrastructure costs as well. So you don't necessarily have to stay where you are. You could map out a proposed divergence of where you think where you would have been versus where you believe you can get to.
Yeah, absolutely. And it all adds up over time. So you're completely right there. Mm-hmm. The infrastructure cost per subscription, basically per unit of subscription in a SaaS there. So say you're paying per user to do it, and again, 1,000 users, you're talking about the same thing, the logarithmic increase the AWS bill versus could you make it so it almost is flatline to bring on a new user. And that's the goal, is to keep it as flat as possible. Or if you're a search engine, it's the cost per sale per search. If you're in e-commerce, it's basically for every dollar you're spending on AWS bills, how much in revenue are you making back? That ratio, keeping that ratio, so for every $1 you spend on AWS, you want to be making more and more money there. But if you grow, of course, your AWS bill is going to go up slightly. You can't just flatline and say, hey, I want to keep my AWS bill at 1,000 and then 100x my users. It's going to grow, but it's just we need to make it our goal to grow it smaller than the rate at which the profits increase.
In a perfect world, each incremental user should cost you less than the one before it. Now, in the beginning, those steps could be big. And as calculus says, as you approach the asymptote, your changes are going to be very small per additional customer.
Yeah.
Now, you're also not taking into account any change in features or load patterns or other things.
Yeah. You usually see like little cliffs in the spend where you get at a point, it'll flatline, or you'll see like, if it's not a well-designed system, it doesn't horizontally scale. You'll see this point where you get enough traffic and you end up basically having to double your database. Because AWS's instances almost pretty much
double. You max out an instance.
Yeah. Sure. So you'll see these big cliffs that people hit if they don't have the horizontal scaling set up. And it's rather painful to look at because there's a lot of wasted spend in there. If you double the amount of size, you're not doubling your traffic every day. So you've got all these extra CPUs there. And it's not fine tuned for it.
But then we're going into the particulars of that use case, because you could do on-demand and other things that might be different. But anyways, so situationally dependent, too hypothetical to answer in this moment, I think, or to come to any definitive conclusion.
Yeah. But just at the end of the day, this should be looked at as an investment. I'm expending this amount of capital. I expect to get this amount of dollars back.
If you buy a dump truck, you're going to have to maintain it. You're going to expect it to run so many. It's the same thing, except it doesn't wear out. But it still requires maintenance. And I guess it doesn't wear out isn't quite true. It just wears out differently. Things get sunset. Support no longer happens. Languages go obsolete after some number of years. I'm sure there's still some websites on the internet that should have been obsoleted by now, but haven't been.
Yeah.
Without animated GIFs and all sorts of fun things on it.
Absolutely. Yeah. And so these aren't always, I'm talking about financial investments right now. You also There is, my tagline says it all, people, owners of businesses do invest in their own sanity. So if the website's going down at 3 a.m., yes, that's costing your users as well, but there's also an emotional kind of backing. Hey, now I know I've got redundancy. Yep. And all these other things there.
Peace of mind.
So I know I've been coldly capitalistically talking about dollars and cents as well, but it also, these investments can have a intangible benefit as well. Ideally, if you work with us, you get both.
I would argue that they're tangible. For the CTO or the director of platform or something, sure, you're going to get an intangible. You're going to get peace of mind. But from a customer perspective, that peace of mind that is given to the CTO or the director of platform is a more stable, easy-to-use, user-friendly platform that doesn't go down. So there is a return. It's just perhaps not for the investor. They get the intangible. And if the platform is behaving better, not going down, et cetera, theoretically, if you have got revenue, should respond positively to something like that.
Yeah.
But yes, yeah. To your point, to the person writing the check, they are also buying an intangible that, okay, and maybe you can share a video here in the not too distant future where you have somebody talk about that, but to them, it's an intangible, even though it does help the business overall.
Yeah. I mean, I bring that up because you have been a customer of mine before, and when you understand the sleepless nights, some more so than others. And you've been in projects that they're picking up speed and they're going down, and it's a painful thing to have. But yeah, we're getting sidetracked talking about that. But I just wanted to make sure I touch base on the not so dollars and cents side of things. But I strongly encourage anybody purchasing, you know, these, if you're purchasing development services or whatever like that, or you're making an investment in your team or new technology, think of it like an investment, like buying a stock. It's like, I expect the stock to grow or to give these dividends or whatever over the time. And then if you're on the other side of things, if you are, you know, on the service provider side, if you're an engineer, sometimes take off your engineer hat and put on your business owner's hat and say, when you see that new shiny tech, say, is this going to help grow the business? Is it going to help put the business in a better spot? Or is this cool tech
misformulated dream that's not actually going to get to the stated goals?
There's a lot of interesting things out there. There's no shortage of things to spend money on computationally or technologically. Is AI is the easiest one. Is slapping AI on it or a chat widget on it gonna really move the needle for the company, or is that just the trend right now? I know people that have rewritten their stack 10 different times, and they go from Node to PHP to React to whatever the new thing of the day is. And it's like, is that, does your customer know that? Does it have a positive impact on them? Is it somehow attracting more people? Is it saving you money in any way? The amount of man hours to maintain separate parallel stacks is just, it adds up quickly and it sneaks through the cracks. You don't even see it sometimes.
Until it's too late, and then you got yourself a mess. And then you go back to phase one, which is, should we re-engineer the entire stack? Which, yeah. Let's not dive into that, because the answer to that is probably not today.
Yeah, not today. Nope. Yep, so this exercise, hopefully, I'll be running through with a client later on today. So that should be fun. If anybody out there would like to run through these exercises, feel free to reach out to us. We're happy to have a chat with you about that. I guess I'll take this time to plug the group coaching community as well. So this, I'll make stuff like this available to anybody that feels like joining the group coaching community. So you can walk through it with your tech team and make sure that you are investing in features. You're not just chasing this and that. Yeah. That's all I got today. Dom, anything to add?
All right. With that, another chat, another happy Tuesday. And we'll be back next week talking about what I'm not sure yet, but you will tell me between now and then. I got my coffee, if it'll come through my background. There we go. Happy Tuesday.
Happy Tuesday.